Good morning to everybody here. I pray that God's blessing would rest on each of us here this morning. Just briefly before I start, I want to thank y'all for your prayers. I felt your prayers. Your prayers were greatly appreciated and greatly needed. I feel unqualified, and I feel like I'm just a man, and I need y'all's help. I need God's help. I'm not up here by choice. I'd have greatly seen somebody else up here, but if it's what God wants, me and my wife decided we're going to do the absolute best we can. All right, with that, I was wondering recently, why do things have to change? Everywhere we look, it's change, change, change. Why can't things just stay the same for once? There's changes we control. We tend to view those as good change if we made a wise decision. There's changes we can't control, things totally out of our reach that seem to make our world turn upside down. There's changes we like, changes we dislike. Everything changes. Especially if you look back the last 100 years or so, it seems like men suddenly discovered everything, it seems like. There's cars, there's airplanes, there's technology, there's ways we communicate. Everything seems to just taken off. And I talked to a man the other day. It interested me because I like aviation, as y'all know, but he let me cut a tree down on his property, and in the course of the conversation, found out he used to fly back in his younger days. And wouldn't you know, okay, and I did the math. I found this hard to believe, but he said, you would not guess who signed off on my flight instructor's flight license, pilot's license. And the thought Orville Wright crossed my mind, but I thought, surely that's impossible. And he said it was Orville Wright. Orville Wright, now this guy was an old guy, really old, like probably 40 or so. I'm kidding. He was probably 75 or so. And so if he was flying, I think it was in his 20s that he started flying. And he said his instructor was a very old guy. So his instructor, but his instructor's license was signed off by Orville Wright. I was like, wow, all the change that happened in that short amount of time. If you order a computer or a phone today, it seems like by the time you open the box, the thing's outdated and there's something better on the market. Sometimes my phone will ask me for an update and I update it, and it happened to me a while ago. I'm like, what happened to my phone? I about didn't know my way around it. And wouldn't you know, before you know it, you get used to it. And then I was looking on somebody's phone a little while after that didn't have the update yet. And I'm like, wow, how do you handle this antique phone? And I just had the same phone not that much longer ago. We adapt to change. Humans are made to adapt to change, even if it don't always seem like it. There's changes with marriage. There's births. There's deaths. There's night. There's day. There's weather cycles, world events. Decisions made by governments. And just briefly, I'm going to talk mostly this morning about change in our personal lives and how to deal with it. But just briefly, there's sometimes that governments change the way the world looks, or the way that, how do you say it? They make changes that are not scriptural, that us as Christians can never endorse. Things like abortions and same-sex marriage, things like that, that sometimes governments come along and they say, they're okay. And those are never changes us as Christians should adapt to. Some people long for the change of marriage and only to realize it's not everything they thought it would be, and then they have to deal with that change. How are we supposed to deal with this constant whirlwind of change? I want to read you a verse out of Malachi 3:6. the only thing that I know of that don't change in this world. For I am the Lord, and I change not. Therefore, ye sons of Jacob are not consumed. Hebrews 13:8 says, Jesus Christ the same yesterday, today, and forever. God is seriously our only source of stabilization in a world that's always changing. And until we realize that, we're going to have a lot of problems in our life. Sometimes you hear people say, well, that building's there to stay. Or the way they built that, it ain't never going to move. In my barn hauling world, usually if somebody says that building's there to stay, that means we're probably going to be back to move it sooner rather than later. Even concrete buildings, steel buildings, they all need maintenance, or time will change them. You can open your Bible to Genesis 37. Here in a little bit, we're going to look at a man who faced a lot of change in his life. We won't get there right away, but you can go ahead and turn to that. Let's suppose this morning businesses never changes or adapted to changes in life. Suppose Sears just had mail order catalogs yet. You think they'd be any good? Sometimes I'm not sure how good they are anyway, but if the only way to get something from Sears was to order it through a mail order catalog, they wouldn't be here anymore. I'll tell you a story about a man named William Orton. This was in 1879. He was the head of Western Union, the telegraph company. And they had just built a huge new office building, and he was sitting in his new office. They had communications down pat. They were on top of it. If you wanted to communicate with somebody across the world, you talked to Western Union. They would take your telegraph and send it. It was communications like the world had never seen before. People loved it, and it really made people's lives a lot easier. Nobody was bigger and better than them, and nothing could topple their empire. And about that time, he heard a knock on his office door, and he opened it, and there stood a man named Alexander Graham Bell. Does somebody want to know what he invented? Some of the children? Alex. Phone, that's right. You think it was a cell phone? No, it wasn't a cell phone. Anyway, he stood there, and he said, I just invented this little gadget you might be interested in. I'd like to sell it to you for $100,000. And William Orton looked it over and found it kind of interesting. You could literally hear other people's voice. That was a new thing. And he looked it over and he looked it up and down, and he told Alexander, he said, you're really not on to much of anything. People are perfectly happy communicating with telegraph over paper. They don't need to hear each other's voices. And on top of all that, I can't always hear the other person talk clearly. Sometimes it's gnarled and the voice don't come through right. And it's much clearer communications just typing it out on text and sending it that away. And he said, your little gadget there is never going to be anything other than maybe a nice toy. And he sent them on his way. He didn't realize the change that was coming to the communications world. And I did a little bit of research. If I understand right, Alexander Graham Bell's company today is either merged or it's included in the AT&T. We all know who AT&T is today. Now, there's a bunch of other companies that AT&T bought along the way, and so you can't really say it's all Alexander Graham Bell's invention, but I think it was the mother company of it. And today, AT&T has $531 billion in assets, and Western Union has $9 billion in assets. See the change that William Orton missed out on because he just didn't believe in it? Okay, we're going to look at the life of Joseph a little bit. You talk about a man that faced some change in his life. He was the firstborn of Jacob's favorite wife, Rachel, And his life was probably pretty easy from what we read in Genesis 37. He probably never had to do the dirty work. I'd say his brothers had to do it. Seems like Jacob let him off pretty easy. He probably never had to take the slop out, and if he did, he probably for sure never had to do it after dark. I don't know about y'all, but that was one scary thing for me as a 9-year-old boy. If Mom made me take the slop out after dark, that was about as bad as it got. And you can see favoritism showed through in his relationships with his brother. Chapter 37, verse 4 says, "And when his brethren saw that their father loved him more than all his brethren, they hated him and could not speak peaceably with him." They couldn't even talk nice about Joseph. Verse 20, we'll see the terrible effects of envy. Chapter 37, verse 20. This was when Jacob sent Joseph to go find his brothers. And they seen him coming. They said, "Come now, therefore, let us slay him and cast him into some pit, and we will say some evil beast devoured him, and we shall see what becomes of his dreams." And then we see verse 22, Reuben was trying to be the nice brother in the bunch. And Reuben said unto them, "Shed no blood, but cast him into a pit that is in the wilderness, and lay no hand upon him, that he might rid him out of their hands to deliver him to his father again." So at least Joseph had a brother that was watching his back for a little bit. And then we'll see what happened after that. Thought I had this verse wrote down. See if I can find it. Okay, verse 24. "And they took him and cast him into a pit, and the pit was empty, and there was no water in it. And they sat down to eat bread, and they lifted up their eyes and looked, and behold, a company of Ishmaelites came from Gilead with the camels bearing spicery, balm, and myrrh, going to carry it down to Egypt. And Judah said unto his brother, 'What profit is it if we slay our brother and conceal his blood? Come, let us sell him to the Ishmaelites, and let not our hand be upon him, for he is our brother and our flesh.' And his brothers were content." So they threw him in the pit, and look at what his brothers were able to do. This is a terrible cost of envy and jealousy. First of all, they threw him into the pit. Then they sat down and ate. Obviously, it didn't bother their conscience at all about what they had done, if you're able to sit down and eat. They sold him when he begged them not to. You would find that thought in chapter 42, verse 21. And then they killed a goat that probably wasn't theirs. It was probably their father's, to cover up their sin. I have a brother who shoots the neighbor's cows sometimes, but he does it unintentionally. He didn't do it on purpose. But these guys took a goat that wasn't theirs and killed it just to cover up their sin. Then they lied on top of that. They lied to their dad about what happened. And then they sold him to a group of guys that were at odds with them for years. These Ishmaelites, if I did my research correct, were descendants from Hagar, Abraham's wife. Remember the one that kept arguing with Sarah, and God kicked her out into the desert with her little boy, and she was out there begging God not to let her and her son die, and God pointed her, I should have looked that up, I think God pointed her to water, or anyway, they survived. These were the descendants from these people. And these people tended to have long memories, and I'd say Joseph's brothers probably knew who they were selling them to. I'd say they knew it probably didn't bode too well for Joseph to sell them to these guys. But they did it anyway. Let's turn over to chapter 39. So Joseph was going through a heap of turmoil in his life. If anybody had any reason to be discouraged, it was probably him. Going from being a favorite son, thrown into a pit, and then dug out and sold to your enemies by your very own family. You talk about somebody that had a right to be very discouraged about life. But let's see what Joseph did in 39, 1 through 6. And Joseph was brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, the officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought him of the hands of the Ishmaelites, which had brought him down thither. And the Lord was with Joseph, and he was a prosperous man, and he was in the house of his master the Egyptian. And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and the Lord made all that he did prosper in his hand. And Joseph found grace in his sight and served him, and made him overseer over his house, and all that he had he put into his hand. And it came to pass from the time that he had made him overseer in his house and over all that he had, that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake, and the blessing of the Lord was upon all that he had in the house and in the field. And he left all that he had in Joseph's hand, and he knew not aught he had save the bread he did eat, and Joseph was a goodly person and well favored. So he goes from being a slave to second in command in the land. It seems like fairly quickly. I don't know how much time passed by there. And I'm not going to read the whole story, but then we know what happened with Potiphar's wife, and Joseph gets thrown into jail again. Or not again, I guess that was his first time, but Joseph gets thrown into jail. And it's like, so he's a favorite son, he's thrown into a pit, he's sold into Egypt, then he becomes second in command, and now he's back in jail. He had every reason to be discouraged all over again. And let's see how Joseph made the best of that situation. 39, I had that wrong. 39:20, I think, is where that starts. And Joseph's master took him and put him into prison, a place where the king's prisoners were bound, and he was there in prison. And the Lord was with Joseph and showed him mercy and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of prison. And the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners that were in the prison, and whatsoever they did there, he was the doer of it. The keeper of the prison looked not anything that was under his hand, because the Lord was with him, and that which he did, the Lord made to prosper. How many of you, now, okay, Joseph kept his relationship with God, and the reason I believe that is the Lord, it says the Lord made everything he did to prosper. And how often is I don't think our relationship with God is one-sided. God doesn't just look down and blast blessings on you. You have to also return your thanks and your praise to God. Does that make sense? I don't know if it does or not. But in other words, if Joseph would have had a victim mentality and a I can't do this and why am I here and had all the excuses and not given God, not kept worshiping God, I don't think God would have kept blasting his blessings down on him. I might be wrong in that. I'm not sure if that's clear or not. That's not quite how I meant to say it, but I'm not sure how to say it any better. And then let's go on. Verses 20. No, that's wrong. We all know the story, though, of the butler and the baker and the dreams and all that. And I'm not going to read all that story. I would recommend y'all read that whole story of Joseph. I sat down and read it from the start to the beginning, and it is interesting. It'll make you sit on the chair, edge of the chair, and it's a nonfiction story. It's a good old story. And anyway, we all know how Joseph interpreted Pharaoh's dreams. Pharaoh pulled him back out of jail, and he became second in command again. And let's see, that story is in, I think that starts in verse 37, chapter 41, 37 through 45. I'll just read that quickly. And the thing was good in the eyes of Pharaoh and in the eyes of all his servants. And Pharaoh said unto his servants, can we find such a one as this is, a man in whom the Spirit of God is? And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, For as much as God has showed thee all this, there is none so discreet and wise as thou art. Thou shalt be over my house according unto thy word shall all my people be ruled. Only in the throne will I be greater than thou. And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, See, I have set thee over the land of Egypt. And Pharaoh took off his ring by his hand and put it on Joseph's hand and arrayed him in vestures of fine linen and put a gold chain around his neck and made him to ride in the second chariot which he had. And they cried before him, Bow the knee. And he made the ruler over all the land of Egypt. And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, I am Pharaoh, and without thee shall no man lift up his hand or foot in all of Egypt. And Pharaoh called Joseph's name something that I'm not even going to try to pronounce. And he gave him wife Asenath, the daughter of Potiphar, priest of On. And Joseph went out over all the land of Egypt. So we see him back out of jail again. And second in command over all of Egypt again. So let's just go over it again. He was a favorite son. He was thrown into a pit by his brothers. Then he's back up, sold in Egypt, becomes second in command. Then he's thrown into jail because of a silly woman's lie. Then he's back up out of jail and second in command again. And then he has to deal with all his brothers when they come for corn in the land of Egypt. Y'all can read that. Y'all know that story just as well as I do. You talk about a roller coaster of emotions and change in Joseph's life. It seems like it was a constant change. And how did he deal with it? How did Joseph keep his sanity in a strange land away from all of his parents and deal with all this? I came up with four main points that I think Joseph had down pat. Number one, he kept his relationship with God even in the worst of circumstances. How often do we... Or do I, when I get discouraged with change in my life, or it's change I don't like, or change I don't agree with, it's not always the first thing I think of to go to God and just give it to God and keep my relationship strong with Him. The flesh inside me wants to just say, no, I'm not going to accept it, and no, I don't want to do it, and I don't want to deal with the change. But if you just give it to God, if you just keep your relationship with God, keep your prayer life vibrant, it's amazing what you can handle. Another thing Joseph realized, if you're anchored to God and His unchanging principles, you can handle anything. He realized that what his father had taught him about God was true. And he realized he could handle it. He was faithful in the little things, even when it seemingly didn't matter. The one verse, and I didn't write that down, said something about he was faithful in everything that was found in his hand. That's not quite interpreted right, but it was something along that line. So in other words, even if it seemed like something that didn't matter, he was faithful in it anyway. And the fourth point I have, he kept on the lookout for other people's needs. Why else would he have prepared Egypt for 7 years of famine if he wouldn't have cared for other people? Egypt was the world power in that time. And if he'd have just cared for himself, he wouldn't have cared if the rest of the world would have starved. He'd have just stored up his little sack of corn somewhere and probably hid it. But he had a heart for other people and the world around him. Change isn't always fun, and sometimes seemingly never fun. But if we know who we are anchored to, we can handle it. One of my favorite verses, I can't say it is my favorite verse, but it's one of my favorite verses, Jeremiah 29:11. For I know the thoughts that I think toward you, saith the Lord, thoughts of peace and not an evil, to give you an expected end. God knows we all have fears of the future and fears of change, and we don't like what we see coming down the road. We don't like the way the country's headed. We don't like the way sometimes church life is headed. We just want everything to stay exactly the same, at least if you're like me. But God knows His thoughts, and His thoughts towards us are of peace. Doesn't that give you hope this morning? He has thoughts of peace and not of evil to give us an expected end. Nobody likes and we all have a fear of the future, it seems like, right? And not to know what happens is going to happen is very unsettling at times. But he has an expected end for us. And guess what? Us as Christians this morning, we have God's word that he gave to us. And I read the back of the book, our side wins. Us Christians, God's side wins. And if we're on God's side, we can handle it. So the thought I want to leave with you this morning is no matter what changes we face, we can rest assured that with God, we can handle it. And we know from Jeremiah 29:11, "For I know the thoughts that I have, that I think towards you, saith the Lord, thoughts of peace and not of evil, to give you an expected end." He thinks good thoughts towards us. He loves us. And he knows what we need, even though we don't always understand it. He knows what we need, and he knows what's good for us. Can we just leave it with God? Sometimes it's hard. I find it awful hard. Because I'm a guy. I like to handle it. You know, I got this. But then changes come, and you realize you don't have it. Just give it to God, guys. All right, let's stand for prayer.